Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Brandon Butler of the band Boy's Life. Formed in Kansas City, Missouri in 1993, Boy's Life stands as one of the bands most integral to that city's music scene in that decade. Standing alongside other bands such as Giant's Chair, Christie Front Drive, and Knapsack. The group disbanded in 1997, but a 2024 box set from Chicago's New Marrow Group label, titled Home is a Highway, demonstrated that interest in Boy's Life was still strong. The group got together in June 2024, just outside Kansas City, and worked up new material that comprises their EP Ordinary Wars, which is out November 21st on the Spartan label. Butler, who now lives in Louisville, Kentucky, recently discussed the impact that the box set had on the band, the group's overall legacy, and the song Ordinary War, which stands as the centerpiece of the EP and is arguably the best song in the Boy's Life catalog. That's Brandon Butler of Boy's Life on Into Music, coming up now. Was the box set, was this kind of like the inspiration for you getting back together and playing together again?
When the box set came out, it was kind of weird because I didn't know. This is the thing too. It's like I didn't really know about that label. I didn't really know about the goings on of. I didn't follow that stuff. You know, I didn't know what Numero Group was. I didn't know about that it would be something that would be really cool. I was just sort of like, well, you know, you want to do what? You want to get all these recordings and put them in one place? Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, do that. You should do that. And then when I found out, like, it was like, oh yeah, they're going to put a little bit of money on it and it's going to look really great. And it's going to be this different variants of vinyl. And it's like, wow, that's cool. But I guess, I don't know. I guess my theory was that the people that would buy that stuff already had it, you know, they had it already. In 2015, the second record got reissued, and I was like, well, this just seems kind of like, it's like tripling down. It's sort of like, we've got this one record came out once, then it came out again, and now we're going to put it out again. So it was like, kind of like, okay. But it's really nice. It's beautiful. It's well put together. I think for me, I didn't want that to be sort of the calling card. Like, that's the last thing we're going to ever do. Like, because people already had it. And I kind of felt, and the more I discovered kind of all the, because, you know, Numero Group, for people that don't know, and I didn't know, it's an archival type label. You know, and I didn't know that existed. I didn't know that, like, you know, the emo people were in the AARP set already. So I didn't know that was a thing. And so I was like, oh, okay. So this is like, they want to archive all this. Oh, that's cool. And then I started to think like, well, I don't know how I feel about that. That's kind of weird. So we should probably put something out just to sort of as an official goodbye. Like, that's nice, but you already have that. And I wanted to sort of bow out with something new. So that's what we did. And it turned out great. So I'm pretty happy with it.
It's interesting to me, too, that the, you know, as you're thinking about the box set, but what I've seen is, like, especially the last couple of years, there's this resurgence in interest of emo. And you probably started to see this, you know, that there are kids who were not born when you broke up who are now finding the band and falling in love with the band.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely true. It blew me away. I didn't know that stuff was out there. It was weird. It was like, really, you guys, I don't know. It was strange because there's been so much music. There's been 30 years of music in bands between the ending of that band and then, you know, things that have happened since then, there's been five or six other bands and 17 records. And, you know, that was just sort of the starting block. And I didn't know that people would be so interested in it, but, you know, I kind of wondered what they saw in it, to be honest with you. I was kind of like, this is strange music for people to just sit around and listen to. It's some of it's kind of dissident. It's weird. It's, and then when we started listening to it, we got the masters back and we started talking about playing. I started listening to it and I was like, okay, I guess I get that. Music is so different now. It's so transactional these days. I guess that people like sort of imagine what these bands were like before the internet. How did we do it? How did we survive? How did we survive without the internet? You know? So I think it's cool, man. I think it's really cool. I think it's great that people are interested in that.
Yeah, I guess I just sort of realized that, yeah, you would have broken up just like probably that last generation of bands that, you know, didn't have to think about a MySpace page and a website and all the stuff that you got to worry about now, metrics and things like that online.
Yeah. I don't know. You didn't, that wasn't even in the vocabulary. I still don't get it. You know, I still don't. I'm on Facebook just to go on Marketplace and find like lawnmowers or a guitar that some guy had to sell because it needed a new transmission. Or it's just, you know, I try to stay off social media more because I try to keep my kids. I don't want to set a bad example for my kids. I don't want them on it. So I try my best to stay away from it. But yeah, it was a different world without it. You were in the blind. You just kind of, you put a flyer up and you put it at the record store and you'd show up to whoever's house or the club or whatever. And then people would just trickle in and you just sort of, that was it. You didn't know. And honestly, it was great. I miss that. And we play shows now. It's like, you know, we've already pre-sold. I'm like, I don't want to know that. I want to walk into a room and there's like 300 or 400, 500 people. And be just floored. Well, I already know now there's going to be at least this many people, you know? So it was great. You were in the moment then, you know? Now at the technology and the metrics, like you say, it kind of takes you out of the moment. It's kind of strange. There were a pool of musicians in the punk scene in Kansas City and skateboarders and people who were into punk. And that was your little tribe. And you lived in that tribe. And that was all you knew. You didn't think about the future. So that's why I think I try to stay away from it a little bit. So that when I go to a show, which is rare, or I've got a new band, we're playing Lexington this weekend. I don't know how many people are going to show up. I just post it, take it with a grain of salt and show up and there'll just be some people or there won't. And we'll play and then we'll come home. And, there's something exciting about not knowing, you know, and kids now know everything about everybody.
Well, you know, you mentioned this thing about not thinking about the future, and I promise we'll get to the EP, but but the box set, there was archival stuff, and of course the recordings were there. So was somebody in the band like keeping track of all of this?
Yeah. John Anderson did a great job. He's sort of the curator of the band. He the drummer, he's very good at that. Him and Reba, the bass player, Reba kind of handled, in 2015, he handled that reissue stuff. He did most of that. And, but John was really on point with all of the gathering and getting together and emailing and stuff. So he did a great job with that. I mean, that's his wheelhouse. He's definitely like a, you know, he's always been that guy that sort of takes the lead on sort of the art side of things. And he's really talented at it. He's really great at it. So he was the dude.
I know. Sometimes like with local bands and stuff, it's frustrating because, you know, they'll do a reunion or something and then they're trying to remember like, when did we start? And like, nobody's kept anything, you know? And it's just like all that stuff is lost essentially, except for the music itself.
Yeah. Here's what's crazy. I've got a box of the box sets that I opened up and gave my sister one. She opened it up and she was like, "Oh, I don't want the black vinyl one. I want the, what other colors do you have?" I said, "I've got some blue ones." So we opened them up. And other than that, I don't personally own any of my recorded material on any format at all. If I want to listen to a Boys Life song, or it's not like I'm sitting around listening to Boys Life songs, but if I wanted to, I would stream it. I would have to go on the internet to find it. Like, I didn't. Yeah, I don't have any of that stuff. I don't have test pressings. I don't have 7 inches. I used to have all of that stuff. And I just don't have it anymore. I got into this. I got into this whole minimalist sort of mindset probably 4 years ago. I wanted to get rid of all my stuff that I didn't want to move it or whatever. And so a guy from Cincinnati who was on one of the sort of emo groups, he owns thousands and thousands of records. And I said, "Hey, you want to buy my entire record collection off me? Everything?" He's like, "Yeah, sure." He came down and he bought everything for stupid cheap. And I just loaded his van up with every piece of vinyl I had, everything from some of the first records I bought in high school all the way to, you know, the last sort of records I bought. And so I don't own any vinyl. I don't own any of it. It's crazy, right? It's nuts. And we kept the CDs, which I still think as a 51-year-old person is the greatest format ever to exist. It's amazing. It's a little shiny record that does the same thing as those heavy ass records you have to move. So we still have stuff CDs, but most of the time, no, I don't own any of it. I have the box set. So it's great it came out so I could have my own music again.
So what was the writing process for this material? Is this stuff where do you get in a room and you start writing? And if so, if that's what it is, what was that like after all this time to have you all back in the place working on new music?
When the box set thing started to come out, I said, "Well, there'll be some interest." So this is my thinking. I could, because then I was immersed back in the, I was like, got into the internet. I figured out, well, I knew, obviously know what the internet is, but I started to research like, oh, wow, this is a, people really like this label. There's some good stuff here and people are going to pay attention to this. I'm like, I think it's time to ride my own coattails. I think we should write some music. I'm going to ride 18-year-old me's coattails and we'll all get together as old people and write some music. So I banged out 3 songs and we got together just to kind of play them. And then Joe had a riff that we sort of circled some parts around and we came up with the 4 songs and we just went in the studio and recorded them just like that. We got together for 2 days. We went in the studio and that's the end of it. That was the whole shebang. I was writing some lyrics in the studio. I sang 1 song in the studio and then I completed the vocals at my little home studio. And then Dwayne Trower mixed and produced all of it. And that was it, man. It was like, it was the easiest thing we had ever done, ever. So it was great. I mean, and it turned out really nice. I was sort of surprised because I figured, well, it's either going to work or it's not. And it did. It worked out in typical Boys Life fashion where we don't plan ahead. We show up with half the information and half the know-how, and we just sort of limp our way through it. And at the end, there's something that, you know, kind of pops out. But it was great. Yeah, it turned out really nice. It was a lot of fun.
And everybody was basically on the same page about new music, or was there like some, I don't know about this?
I think everybody wanted to do something because, I mean, we're all very different people. We all have different jobs, different lives, different. Just we couldn't be any more different. And but I think that we, as a unified force, we definitely wanted to make something that would sort of, you know, I didn't want to make a record. I just wanted to record a little bit of music. I mean, and there was talk of doing a record, and I kind of pushed back. I said, I don't really want to do a record. Number one, I don't have time, and it's expensive to take time off work and leave your family. And I've got kids of 12 and 9, and as soon as I leave the house, they go crazy. And so I just I think that we wanted to do a record or something like that, and then I really just wanted to have a few really good songs. We didn't really know. I think that once we got into the process of it, then the expectations sort of start to brew and people get ideas. I think Joe really wanted to make a record. I think that the idea was to get into the studio and sort of riff around and kind of hope that we could catch more lightning in the bottle than would fit. And myself, I was satisfied with the four songs. I thought they sounded really good. They were really cohesive, which is kind of unlike us, because we have a lot of songs that are just a bunch of parts, or they're just real linear and long and atmospheric. But these were songs. You know, these were formatted in a certain way where they were for our, I don't know, whatever, our friends. I don't want to say fans because that's dumb. But people who could listen to it. I just kind of thought, well, with people like us, like I'm not gonna sit down and listen to Tortoise just put out a 7-minute song. I don't have 7 minutes. You gotta get in and out, 3.5 minutes, 4 minutes. It better make sense. I've got, there's a lot of traffic. I can't listen to all that mess. So, I mean, and that was the thing too. We all agreed on that. Like even Joe's like, I don't know, we're pushing 4 minutes. I'm like, yeah, you should probably clip it or shorten it. But yeah, I think that it was a really unexpected recording, that it came out really well. And I think that we checked all the boxes. Sure, I wish we had more songs. I wish we had more time to make a full-length record. It leaves you wanting more. And that's what a good record should do, I think. You should want to listen to it again. So they'll just have to, I mean, you know, they're just going to have to listen to it over and over again. Which you can do with a CD a lot easier, by the way.
It's true. They start over when they come to the end.
That's right. That's right.
You don't have to even get up out of your chair.
No.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say one thing. I mean, I love the material as a whole, but Ordinary War, I thought, man, if you had all gotten back together and just done that song. I thought that was, I think that's just an amazing tune.
Thanks.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about how that came together and so forth?
I mean, it's pretty easy. I think we all see it. I think we all see it. If you don't see it, you're a fool. I'm in the trades. I work really closely with a lot of Hispanic folks, a lot of people who are working class people. I live in a Midwest, you know, no offense, but a B market city. And there's a huge wealth divide. I work for a lot of wealthy people in what I do for a living, and which is, I'm glad they're wealthy. But anyway, you see a lot of people who just aren't going to make it. Like they can work and work and work and work. And you used to be able to work yourself out of the middle class and advance yourself and have some time and a work-life balance and somehow, you know, and be able to quiet your mind. And I just think it's not going to end well for us if we continue to go down this path of just chasing identity and hustle culture. And every single day there's some just insane thing on the news. And, you know, we're governed by idiots. And they're giant children. I mean, they are. It's like they're just children in these big bodies, and they throw fits and they steal our money, and then they make everything so convenient that we become dependent on them. Like, you know, I'm just as guilty as anybody else. If I want something, I'm going to Amazon to get it. So I'm just feeding this thing that's like really just taking away the personality and what I think maybe was once really cool about certain cities. I don't feel like where I live has a vibe like it probably used to. I don't feel like Kansas City, and they've held on to it more than most cities, but like these cities are just starting to lose their originality. I don't know what the word is. They're starting to, it's just like this homogenization of like all the cities, nobody shops, and it, you become more insular, and it's just like, I don't know. It's a hellscape journey down, but it is. It's just like this war, whatever. I guess if you were to say a war, I mean, if you're gonna get away from that, you've just got to start to adopt a real. You've got to back so far up and realize that, like, a lot of this stuff that goes on that we value in this world, not just this country, it's everywhere, is just pointless. Like, how much money you have in your bank account, I don't know. What car you drive, it doesn't matter. And even my kids, like, you know, they just like the whole concept of an influencer, or the concept of, and I even see it since I've started to kind of look more towards musicians. Music now is more transactional. It's nobody does anything anymore without needing some sort of attention. They're looking at likes. Even I do it. Like I look a monkey. Like, oh, how many people liked it? You know, or is it going to be, you know, it's this constant trying that people do, and they do it on all levels, and it's pervasive in our society, in our art, in our food. There's, and again, though, I'm guilty of it. You know, I order Amazon. I do the same people thing that everybody does. It's almost inescapable, and there's nothing we can do when we hear about SNAP benefits going away and people hungry and watching, you know, like I said, Latino folks that I work with closely who are scared. They have more right to this land than anyone else. They're brown because they're indigenous to this continent. We're not. And what's so sad about it is it just could be so easy, you know, and that's just the only perspective I have. And that's another reason why there's only four songs. I mean, what am I going to write about? You know, there's, I don't feel like a, you know, I feel like that's basically the only beef I have with humans right now, is that we're just in, we have lost so many things that are authentic and cool. Like we were talking about life before the internet, living in the moment. Nobody lives in the moment. I know when every band is playing a show. I know, I can hear it. I can get on the internet and find out what guitar, pedal, chord they play, what van they drive, their whole rundown. I know about it before I go, so there's no mystery in anything. And with all of these songs on the EP, that's sort of the overarching theme of it, that I really wanted to be the last Boys Life thing. It's like, I mean, not like anybody's listening to me. That's not like I'm some sort of like bathroom remodeling in Louisville Bob Dylan that's going to change the course of, you know, nobody gives a rat's ass what I think. But if I'm going to say something, I'm going to say, like, hey, this is, maybe we should go back to doing things a little different, not buy in so much. And we all do it. Punk rockers do it. You know, liberals, MAGAs, everybody, we just buy in the whatever. And we have too much information for your little head to handle. That's the whole EP. Like, if you look at the artwork and everything, I mean, it just encompasses that. That's the only message that I think that I don't care about somebody's personal emotional journey anymore. It's like, I think that as a species, we need to kind of get together a little bit better. And start thinking about this stuff as like, we're just hurting ourselves by buying into a lot of the ideas that are out there and picking sides. And but yeah, it's definitely it's a dark theme, and it's but you know, like I say, I spend a lot of time alone in you know, just thinking about this stuff. It that's why there's, I think there's a lot of energy around that, and I think that all the everybody in the band feels that way, you know. I think we all feel that way. I think with a lot of the old material, there wasn't much to be said outside of just personal strife. Like, a lot of hardcore and punk music is about like an individual's journey. Like, this is my beef with this person. this someone broke my heart, or the scene sucks, or whatever. It's just this topical sort of whatever. It's innocent in a way. And so I heard those old songs on the box set, and I said, you know, I think we need to do something a little bit. It's got a little more teeth to it. I mean, you know, there are bands like Fugazi who did that, who definitely would change your mindset, who just even with their banter would sort of sway thinking. And I don't think I've ever done that with music. So this was the opportunity to do that. And it was pretty cool.
You've been listening to a conversation with Brandon Butler of Boys Life. The group's new EP, Ordinary Wars, is out November 21st via the Spartan label. You can learn more about the band's present activities via their official social media accounts and their Bandcamp page, where limited edition vinyl copies of Ordinary Wars are available. The record may also be purchased via the Spartan Records website. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And as always, it's a great time to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.